In the town hall of Copenhagen, Denmark, there is a clock. It is an advanced astronomical clock that was designed and built by a man named Jens Olsen. And so it came to be called the Jens Olsen World Clock. It took over 12 years to build, from 1943 to 1955. It was started on December the 15th, 1955. He passed away before he had the opportunity to see his clock started. But this clock consists of 12 movements. It has 15,488 individual parts within it. It is a mechanical clock which has to be wound once a week, and it is accurate to 2/5 of a second over 300 years. It loses 2/5 of a second every 300 years. The fastest gear in the clock turns at a revolution, or one revolution every 10 seconds. The slowest gear on the clock every 25,753 years. The clock computes the time of day, the days of the week, the months and the years, and the movements of the planets for 2,500 years. But we live in the atomic age. In the atomic age, we have something far better. We have what is called the cesium atomic clock. And that clock is the standard that is used today to define the second, as set by, which is the basic unit of time set by the International Standard of Units. Cesium, how does it work? Cesium-133 atoms are bombarded with microwave radiation, and they generate energy within the atoms. And the frequency levels that are associated with that energy generation are used to calculate time to an accuracy level of about plus or minus 1 second in 1 million years. I won't live to see either one. But you know, there's something that both of those clocks have in common. Both of those clocks are dependent upon something else for setting the correct time. There is no man-made clock that can set and keep perfect time on its own. No, there has to be a reference point by which that clock is set. 3,500 years ago, the sun was the reference point. It was used by the Egyptians in their sundials to make sure that they had the correct reference point so that they could determine the time of the day. In our modern day and time, it is the energy levels within atoms that determines. It's the reference point that is used to determine. But both of these, whether it is the sun or the energy level in atoms, both of these recognize that the universe, God's creation, is the standard reference point for life on earth. God created the sun, God created the atoms, and all of this is from what God has created. And we have succeeded in keeping better time. Our atomic clocks, I have a clock in my office that sets itself on a regular basis because it connects with the atomic clock out in Colorado. So I know that that clock is right, unless the battery runs down. But you know, we have not become independent from creation. No, we are still dependent upon the creation in which we live, the world in which we live, and we have not succeeded in becoming independent from our Creator. If Paul were to walk into an atomic laboratory today, the Apostle Paul, and talk to the scientist who worked on this cesium 133 that was used as the basis for determining time by the atomic clock, I think there would be two questions he would ask them. One question would be, how do you know that the atoms are vibrating consistently in response to the microwave radiation that you're subjecting them to? How do you know that they're consistent? And number two, who do you think is responsible for that consistency? Where did it come from? You got up this morning, the sun had already risen for many of you. Some of you got up before it rose. You know it's going to set today. You know, we know today, we can turn on our televisions and they'll tell us what time the sun is going to rise, what time it's going to set. Why? Because we can calculate those things. Why? Because it's consistent. Why? Because someone made it that way. A creator made it that way. And in the verses that we have before us this morning, Paul talks about God's wrath being revealed upon the unrighteous, upon all ungodliness and unrighteousness. He's talked about in verses 16 and 17 the revelation of God's salvation. It is revealed through the gospel. The gospel is God's power to save. But now he talks about the revelation of God's wrath and who that wrath is revealed upon. And what I want to draw our minds together to think about today, and this is what we find in verses 18 through 32. I only had Eddie read through verse 23 because it was a rather long reading. But what Paul is describing to us in these verses is what the world would be like and will be like if God is removed from it. If we choose to take God out of the picture. And folks, it's not a pretty picture that I have to paint for you this morning. That's why the gospel is so important. Because the world without God and without the righteousness of God is what we see portrayed by Paul in the verses that are before us this morning. You see, a world without God starts with the truth. And the truth is that people know God. As a matter of fact, Paul says that God has made it evident within us. That the attributes, certain attributes of God are evident within us. He names two things specifically. He says God's eternal power and His divine nature. When you think about where we live today, I have some questions for you. Where did it all come from? How did it all get here? And not only that, is it possible that someone had to exist before it existed? If you start telling me, well, this happened, this came from this. Okay, where'd that come from? Well, that came from this over here. Well, where'd that come from? Well, that came from this. Okay, let's go all the way back. Where'd the first thing come from? You want to say we all came from a Big Bang? Where'd the Big Bang come from? What caused the Big Bang? It had to come from an uncaused, what some call an uncaused first cause. There had to be someone that existed before everything existed. It didn't just happen. It didn't just happen. You know something else? And young people, I don't have time to go everywhere I want to go with this morning, but let me just throw something out at you. Scientists know that you cannot get living matter from non-living matter. So how do we get living amoebas and cells from rocks? Tell me that. Evolution does not hold water when you really start to examine it and try to figure it out. The other thing he says is that God's divine nature is revealed to us. We see all around us throughout history. There is something that exists that's greater than us. Man has sought to worship something since the beginning. If you don't believe me, just study archaeology. Study history. People have always sought to worship something. You look at the idols around the world and you realize that man has had a desire to worship something. Where did that desire come from? Why is there a desire to worship something out there? David knew. Because in Psalm 19, David wrote that the heavens are telling the glory of God. Verse 1, their expanse, he says, is declaring the work of His hands. Day to day, he says, pours forth speech. Night to night reveals knowledge. There is no speech, nor are there words. Their voice is not heard. Their line has gone out throughout all the earth. And their utterances to the end of the world. He says, they don't speak. What you see around you does not speak. It doesn't say God created us, but you can look at it. You can look at its consistency. You can look at the intricacy of it, and you have to realize something brought all of this to be. Or If you were to go back and look at Paul's sermon on Mars Hill there in Acts chapter 17, and you look at verses 26 and 27, one of the things he says to these philosophers that are always searching for new truth, he says, he, and he's speaking about God, made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth. And then he goes on after talking about how God has set the boundaries of their habitation. He says in verse 27, why? That they would seek God if perhaps they might grope for Him and find Him. What Paul is saying is that God created us with to have within us the desire to seek Him out, to search for Him. Because there is something out there that is greater than us, and we want to know that. But Paul says what's happened is they know the truth. You see, a world without God begins when people know God, but they don't want to know God. They suppress the truth, he says. They do it in unrighteousness. And to suppress something is to hold it back. Have you ever suppressed a cough? Have you ever suppressed a sneeze? You work to hold it in. You don't want to let it out. He says they suppress the truth. They've held the truth back. They've restrained it. He tells us one of the ways they did that is in verse 21, that even though they knew Him as God, they did not honor Him or give thanks. We live in a world today in which many don't honor God anymore. They don't give thanks to God. They're not like David of old who went out one night and looked up at the stars and as he recorded in Psalm chapter 8, verse 1, would write, O Lord, our Lord, how excellent is Your name in all the earth. Or as he would write later in Psalm 139 as he examined his own physical frame, his body. He would write there in 139, verse 14, I give You thanks. For I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are Your works. My soul knows it very well. You see, the natural response when one looks at the creation is to say, God did this. God created me. I am here because of a God. But there are those who have suppressed that truth and they don't give thanks to God. They don't honor Him as God. And as a result of that, what they say to us in trying to suppress the truth and what we are being told day in and day out is that we're just the result of chance. You're just here because of a random process. You exist because over billions of years, mankind has evolved from the lowest life forms. You exist because the fittest of the species competed for survival until man came on the scene. And young people, I'm going to tell you something. Every time you walk into a museum, the truth is being suppressed. When you look at one of those placards in front of a dinosaur and it says 70 million years ago, that's somebody suppressing the truth because that's not truth. Dinosaurs didn't live 70 million years ago before man ever walked on the face of this earth. Dinosaurs existed at the same time man existed. But to fit into the theory that Charles Darwin kind of kicked off, and that others have jumped onto and followed, that has to work into their reasoning. Almost every time you open a science textbook, the truth is being suppressed when you read things that tell us that we are evolved from lower life forms. And yet, even as I say that, I want you young people to understand that not every scientist nor do every teacher believe those things that we find being taught around us today. There are a host of credible scientists who believe in a thing called intelligent design. There's a lot of them out there, and intelligent design is that we came from something greater than ourselves. And others are pushing that to help us realize that there is a God who has created us. But Paul tells us that those who choose not to honor God and choose not to give Him thanks, he says they became futile in their speculations. Their foolish heart was darkened. He says, professing to be wise, they became fools. Paul is saying that when you take God and you say there is no God and you try to suppress the truth about God, you think yourself wise, but you're the fool. Long ago in Psalm 14, verse 1, David wrote, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. The person that says there is no God, by the very definition of what David and Paul are saying, is a fool. because there is a God and there is evidence of Him all around us. But what happens when you suppress that truth long enough and you say, there is not a God. We're here because of what we've done. Not only do you suppress it, but you begin to replace that truth with something else. Paul says we replace the truth with idolatry. And when we no longer give God the glory that is due to His name, we give that glory to something or someone else. In the Old Testament, the word glory in the Hebrew came from the word kabod. It was a word that meant weight, literally weight. It had to do with how things were weighed out. I want to buy 5 pounds of this. Well, how much? Well, I need so many ounces of gold or so many ounces of silver to pay for this. It was the weight. But when you ascribed glory to an individual, you were giving weight to that individual, worth to that individual, and to God. You've heard of the name Ichabod. That means no glory or without glory. But our place in this world is to give glory to God. And when we give the glory, the weight that is due God, to something else, whether it is of human form or animal form, then we have given our glory, given the glory due God, to something that is of lesser value than ourselves or equal value to us. And it's at this point, as Paul says, that what we begin to do is we exchange the truth of God for a lie. Because what we have done is we have worshiped, we begin to worship and serve the creation instead of the Creator. There are people today that are worshiping things all over this planet. They're worshiping things. And while we may not have a statue out in our backyard and we go out and we bow down to that statue, there are people today that still worship things. There are people that worship their toys. There are people that worship their hobbies. There are people that worship their sports. I love sports. But folks, I'm sorry, I'm not a person that's going to pay $5,000 or $6,000 for a seat to go watch two men beat each other to the death. My money means more to me than that. I can use it for far better things, like our upcoming Mission Sunday. It's just not worth it. And idolatry is a sign that what we've done is we have turned our moral and our spiritual depravity into something that we worship. Our world is being turned upside down. We upset the spiritual order of things, and there are dreadful repercussions when we begin to upset the spiritual order that God has placed within this world in which we live. As a matter of fact, here's the way Paul says it in verse 24. He says, therefore God gave them over. 3 times he uses that phrase, God gave them over. And he says here that God gave them over in the lust of their hearts to impurity, so that their bodies would be dishonored among them. In Paul's day and time, there were a lot of temples that existed throughout the ancient world in which there were temple prostitutes that people would go and have relations with in the worship to that God that they were worshiping. And Paul says that what is really happening is that God has given them over in the lust of their hearts to their impurity. They're dishonoring their bodies because your body was created by God to be something that honors Him. But then it proceeds from there. You see, when we allow idolatry, then we begin to justify immorality. And folks, that's where we see our society today. When people refuse to acknowledge God, when they suppress the truth of God, when they exchange the truth of God for a lie, when they worship and serve the creature rather than the Creator, what happens is that man loses his value. And no longer do we see ourselves as creatures who have been made in the very image of God. The reason is we've chosen a different truth. And when we choose a different truth, it is at that point that, as Paul says, God gives us over to degrading passions. When you degrade something, you lessen its value. You take away from it what it was intended to be. And when we give ourselves over to these degrading passions, we degrade who we are and what God created us to be. And the way that Paul describes it is very blunt. And I don't have to paint a picture for you. But here's what he says. If you look at verse 26, the latter part, he says, "Women exchange the natural function for that which is unnatural. And in the same way also the men abandon the natural function of the woman and burned in their desire toward one another, men with men committing indecent acts." In blunt terms, he's describing homosexuality and lesbianism, same-sex marriage, and anything else that fits within that. And as I mentioned in the Bible class just a moment ago, this past Tuesday in our Supreme Court, the highest court of this land, oral arguments were heard by those 9 justices, because there are 26 states in this country in which, though the voters passed laws, mandates that marriage should be recognized as solely between a man and a woman, judges overturned those voter mandates, said they were unconstitutional, and now the question is before the High Court as to whether or not it is constitutional for marriage only to be between a man and a woman. And several of the judges have asked questions. Why should we overturn something that has been that way for millennia? I appreciate that question because that is a good question. One judge says it wasn't until 2001 that any country in this world recognized same-sex marriage, and that was Scandinavia. I pray that they make a wise choice and a wise decision. Otherwise, our lives will be far less peaceable than they have been for many years in this world or in this country. But folks, homosexuality, active homosexuality, is a complete reversal of God's natural order. That's what Paul is saying. And young people, please realize something. It indicates a total throwing off of the revealed will and design of God. If you go back to the book of Genesis, you go back to the beginning. In the beginning, God created man in His image. Male and female created He him. You come to chapter 2, and there is no, by this time, of course, it's giving us kind of a detailed look at chapter 1, because there is nothing other than just a male upon this earth. Adam is what he is known by, and God causes a deep sleep to fall upon him, and from his rib creates a woman and calls her Eve. And what we find is that God says, "For this reason shall a man leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh." When you come to the law that God gives to Israel there at Sinai in Exodus chapter 20, verse 12, what we find God saying is, "Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be prolonged in the land which the Lord your God gives you." When you come to Ephesians chapter 5, and I'm just throwing out a few passages, what we find there is that Paul says, "Wives, be subject to your own husbands as to the Lord." And then just a little bit further in verse 25, he says, "Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her." You see, in every situation it is, God sets forth the standard of how a man responds to a woman. It's never a relationship between a man and a man or a woman and a woman. It's how a mother and a father raise children. It's how a father is to be a father and how a mother is to be a mother and how they are to be in relationship together. That's God's design. And Paul even added that those who engaged in these indecent acts, as he says in verse 27, are receiving in their own persons the due penalty of their error. Some years ago, I ordered a book by Dr. Jeffrey Satinover in which he examined it. It was called Homosexuality and the Politics of Truth. And he looked at various studies, and the truth is, which we're not being told, the truth is that these relationships are physically harmful to those who enter into them. Life expectancy of individuals who practice this type of lifestyle is shortened, young people, by 25 to 30 years. Shortened. There are things such as chronic and potentially fatal liver diseases that people who practice these lifestyles struggle with. There is an inevitably fatal immune disease that comes with it, including associated cancers. And these individuals psychologically have a much higher usual incident of suicide. They take their own lives more often than heterosexuals. This is what it brings. Not only does God say it's not good, the very science that examines it says it's not good. It destroys lives. But then he takes it a step further, because Paul's not through. He says that finally, when you create a world without God, you've gone through all this. The final thing is that people choose to live in depravity. He states, verse 28, that they did not see fit to acknowledge God any longer. And because of that, God gave them over, there's that phrase again, to a depraved mind to do those things which are not proper. In Noah's day, God described mankind in similar terms. He says in Genesis chapter 6, verse 5, that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And a society that pushes God aside can expect these things. Notice what he says. He says that these people were filled with all unrighteousness and wickedness and greed and evil. He says they will be full of envy and murder and strife and deceit and malice. What's going on in our world right now? Are we seeing people killing one another? Yes. Are we seeing people lashing out at one another? Are we seeing people out of greed take money? Yes. We are seeing so many things that it seems just 30 or 40 years ago we didn't see that much of. He says that they would be gossips and slanderers and haters of God and insolent and arrogant and boastful and inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, without understanding, untrustworthy, unloving, and unmerciful. It's not a pretty picture, but it's a picture of a world without God. And what makes this picture even worse is that Paul goes on to say that those who make such choices encourage others to live the same way, even though they know it's wrong. Folks, I would much rather live in a world that knows and honors God than a world that chooses to ignore Him and live as if He doesn't exist. So what do we do? What do we do? We're a church in Waverly, Tennessee. What do? We seek God's righteousness. And it's revealed, as Paul says, in his gospel. We pray for our Supreme Court justices in the case that is presently before them, and the leaders of our nation, our state, and our community, that they will make these right choices. We pray for this church that it may live out its faith, that we may live out our faith, and that our response to those who have rejected God in their lives will not be one of anger or of some type of vengeance, but it will be one of sympathy, of concern, of prayer on their behalf, that they will turn to God. At the bottom of your handout, I don't have time to read it because our time is out, but some years ago, a commentary on the book of Romans, a man by the name of R. Kent Hughes, took these verses, starting with verse 28 and going through verse 32, and he wrote the affirmative side. He said, what if it was different? What would life be like here if this was what was true instead of what Paul describes? It's a very different picture. It is a picture of what a world with God could be like. And that's the world I want. And that's the world I believe that you want. A world with God. Not a world without God. But a world with God starts with us. It starts with each one of us saying in our own hearts, in our own minds, I want to do God's will first. I want to honor Him and live for Him all the days of my life. And if you're not a Christian, it starts right there with you making the decision today. I want to be a Christian. I want to put Christ on. I want to know that my sins are washed away, and I'm willing to confess the name of Christ, to be buried with Him in baptism, and to live my life, the rest of my days out for Him. Ray has selected a song to invite us to come. It is a song that is designed to encourage you if you need to start making the difference in your own life to seek God. Why not do it today? Because He's not far from you, and He's waiting for you to come. Won't you do so as together we stand and sing?